Welcome to Nuclear Matters at CIL, a series of podcasts brought to you by the Nuclear Law and Policy Team at the Center for International Law, or CIL. Today's podcast is part of our new sub-series on the governance of floating nuclear power plants, or FNPPs. This two-part episode touches on FNPP technology and regional perspectives, where the focus will be on Southeast Asia. I am Nivedita. Together with Denise Xiong, we will be joined in conversation by our special guest, Dr. Victor Nguyen, who is the co-founder and CEO of Center for Strategic Energy and Resources, a global independent think and do tank, and a nuclear technology expert. As part of this podcast, Mr. Nguyen will share his views on FNPP technology developments in part one, as well as regional perspectives, including FNPP governance in part two. We continue today's episode with part two of this podcast.
Thank you so much, Victor, for taking us around all of the different technologies associated with FNPPs. I want to try and bring us back to the regional perspectives. So do you think that the deployment of a floating nuclear power plant within Southeast Asia is likely? And if so, why? And what sort of time frame are we really looking at here?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Nivi. I think nuclear energy, whether floating nuclear or the land-based nuclear, will come to Southeast Asia and it will come to ASEAN. It is not a question of if, it is only a question of when, right? Because I think we can more or less now all agree on the basis that Southeast Asia needs nuclear energy, whether for our carbon commitment or climate commitment, or whether for energy resilience, energy security. Without nuclear energy, we simply can't be able to, we can't do it. So nuclear energy will have to come to Southeast Asia. And in the region, we already have countries like Vietnam, the Philippines, Indonesia, announcing their plans and national positions to have nuclear energy by 2050. It is a long-term plan, and also it has to be a long-term plan because we cannot have nuclear energy overnight. So it will be impractical to say we want to have nuclear energy by 2020, 2025, or in the next few years. But I think an interesting timeline to look at now is not so much of the national announcement as to, you know, by when we need to have nuclear energy, because that's a line that's probably also taking into consideration the national energy objective and other considerations. But if you look at an industrial timeline, if you look at the companies and countries that are actively pushing small modular reactor development or FNPP, they are more looking at the 2030 timeline. So in fact, if we were to, you know, do a scan of all the announcement, 2030 seems to be almost like a deadline for everyone, you know, on a race to have their first commercial or commercially available reactor to be deployed by then. So this is different as compared to, you know, a few decades ago when we say, oh, let's try first of a kind and then see what, how things go. Then we plan for the nth of a kind, you know, to have multiple projects in the country going forward. In this case, people are talking about having the first commercially available, meaning when we deploy that reactor or deploy that floating barges, the floating barge by 2030, that barge will be operating on a commercial basis. So it's already setting this commercial product at the timeline. And companies like Seaborg, Core Power, Thorcon, Rolls-Royce, and even NuScale, everybody is looking at the same timeline, FNPPs or SMRs. And what would Southeast Asia choose and how would they choose? Would they go for land-based? Would they go for floating? Would they go for small? Would they go for large? I think that is a question that's very difficult to answer. Different questions, different countries will have their preferences. They will also have a different agenda behind their pursuit of nuclear energy. So that will decide, eventually decide where the country land in terms of choosing nuclear technology. So rather than nailing down on FNPP or SMRs, I would say that nuclear energy will come to Southeast Asia. It's only a matter of when. And I think FNPP actually offers a more intuitive solutions for most of the ASEAN countries. I mean, if you think about the archipelago nature of the ASEAN region, we have a very long coastline for any one of us, Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines, even Singapore, we have access to quite a large, quite a sizable coastlines. And these are possible locations for having floating nuclear power plant. And then, of course, in Singapore, we always say, oh, we are land constrained, right? And then when we go to Malaysia and go to other countries, you say, oh, there's so much land. But then if you're, you know, you think in the capacity of those countries, land is still a scarcity. Whether it's Indonesia or whether it's Philippines or whether it's Vietnam, Thailand, land is always precious, right? So we always want land to be used for high value add property development. That could be industrial property, it could be commercial properties. So where does the future of power plant go if cities want to decarbonize, if you want to move pollutions away? Then that's floating nuclear power plant. And if the land space is not conducive enough to have land-based reactors, looking at the sea where we already know how to do offshore wind, we're looking at floating solar, floating nuclear is one of those concepts that is leveraging on the offshore energy resources. In this case, it's nuclear. And it will supply you continuous power, which is much better than as compared to renewables. And adopting floating nuclear power plant also gives different options as compared to the traditional build, own, operate model. You can simply lease the barge. So without having to build, own it, or even commission it, you can simply purchase the energy from the floating barges. And in a concept where we are looking at, you know, the offshore floating multi-utility complex, which uses nuclear energy to produce this multiple energy product like hydrogen, ammonia, water, you're essentially just buying these energy product or energy related products from that facility rather than building and owning that particular facility yourself. But having said that, of course, certain countries will choose to go that way, to want to invest in such industrial facilities, like investing in floating industrial parks. And then when you think in that direction, actually investing in nuclear energy is not so big a barrier as compared to many decades ago, because you're investing in a much bigger value chain. And that, I think, will accelerate the regional nuclear adoptions. So 2030, I think it's really definitely an interesting timeline to look at. In addition to nuclear, there may be other nuclear-related projects that's up and coming.
Thank you, Victor. I just wanted to touch, because you highlighted the two different timelines, the industrial 2030 timeline and the 2050 timeline in terms of targets that they're looking at countries individually. I'm just wondering, because previously when we talked about the technology, we highlighted how at least one aspect of technology, the MSR technology, is a new technology. So does the newness of this technology, even when it's deployed in, like, say, 2030, does that pose a challenge, do you think, at least in the region, from a regional perspective, as to the timeline from when it becomes commercially available to when they actually start deploying in the region?
That's a very good question, Nivi. I think this is the opportunity for me to correct myself one more time. When I say MSR technology is new, it is the new comes on a relative terms. So if you just look at molten salt reactor, we look at the large ones or the technology. This is not a new technology known to the industry. In fact, this technology was developed all the way back in the 1960s from some of the US national labs. So MSR already existed. And in fact, India also has a working molten salt reactor. And so in terms of the fundamentals of the technology, this is not new. But what is new in today's molten salt reactor is we are making it modular. We are making it smaller. We have a new way of managing the molten salt. We also have a better understanding of the fuel cycle, how it looks like. And we can now put the MSR onto a floating barge and make it much safer. So in that sense, we call it generation four because of the inherent safety and the innovative nature of having smaller, modularized old school technology. So it is not a radical innovation as if we discover a new way of having nuclear fission physics. It's not new to that extent. So in that sense, we're not really doing experiment on ourselves. It is more of introducing this technology, make it smaller, and bring it to commercial availability. So in that sense, 2030 isn't a very aggressive timeline. If you look back in the past 10, 15 years, where these startup companies are already looking at it. And having said this startup, I must emphasize one more time that they are not just any startups. They have, you know, reputable nuclear expertise, and some of these startups even have reputable nuclear experts from the industry. They're supporting their designs.
That's great, Victor. Thanks very much. seeing how time is marching on, I'd like to turn to our final question. And in this question, touch on governance, which is something we haven't yet discussed today. If we stick with the so-called industrial timeline of 2030 for now, in terms of governance, and from your vantage point, what do you think the region could or should be doing now to prepare for future floating nuclear power plant deployment? I note, Victor, that your center, of which you are co-founder and CEO, the Center for Strategic Energy and Resources, it's described as a global independent think and do tank. Yeah, and I find that, I really like that. So I think this question really is trying to draw the do aspect of things, you know, important to think, but equally important to do. So what do you think needs doing, if you like?
Thank you, Denise. It's a very good question indeed. So what can and should ASEAN do? I think the first thing that comes to my mind of what ASEAN should be doing at a bare minimum is to keep an open mind about FNPP deployment or development. Right? Do not say no upfront, right? Do not say no, become so negative about this technology. Embrace it, evaluate it, and carefully understand where it fits into the national energy mix or national energy plans. And from that perspective, also look at what policy and regulatory frameworks, if they are not available yet, to be designed in such a way that would allow the FNPPs to operate peacefully and safely in the region, right, so that we can all benefit from the cost competitive and carbon-free electricity from this floating nuclear power plant. And that is important because right now, although some countries have nuclear regulations, some countries have different development of nuclear regulatory frameworks, or legal frameworks, some countries don't. But on the maritime space, if we look at nuclear merchant ships, regulations are non-existent, right? So it is a challenge, and it's at the same time, it is a good opportunity. So what it means is that if you keep an open mind, and if you are seeing that the industry is driving the development of modern of floating nuclear power plant, and they're going to offer this plant on a commercial basis by 2030, and of course, not in ASEAN, but elsewhere, there is already a 2030 climate commitment. But for ASEAN, we also have our energy objectives in mind. So there's a lot that the region needs to do starting from today. So first, we got to look at right now, in terms of the present regulatory or legal framework development, we need to review it. We need to review them carefully and look at how we can improve these regulatory frameworks or legal frameworks so that when the time the industry is ready to offer FNPP as an industrial energy solution, we as in the region, are able to efficiently govern the regulation of FNPP operations. Some countries, depending on their agenda, as I mentioned briefly, might even want to consider being able to design and offer FNPPs in the future. Right, so depending on which part of this FNPP value chain, whether building a vessel or building a reactor or building a part of it is of their interest, that would also help the countries decide which part of the national policy and regulatory frameworks that need to be reviewed, emphasized, and improved. And why we need to do it now is because there is a lead time for any country to develop and mature their regulatory and legal frameworks such that when it comes to the time of implementation, and subject to test or challenge when the first of a kind being deployed in the region, the regulatory and legal frameworks can withstand the test, right? And of course, over time, they can also serve as a sound basis for regulating or even scaling up the regional floating nuclear power plant. So on that note, I think two important aspects that the region collectively should be doing, and I think what each ASEAN member state also needs to keep this in mind when they're developing their domestic regulatory framework. The first one is regional harmonization. I mean, we've been talking about regional harmonization in ASEAN for decades. We look at trans-ASEAN gas pipeline, we look at regional harmonized technical requirement, highway code, for example. That is a very good example of ASEAN regional harmonization. Regulatory harmonization, on trade, on shipping, et cetera, And also we need, in this case, a harmonization of regional classification of FNPPs. We talk about three kinds. And one of them is a highly contentious one with oil rigs, how to classify them, right? And the region, I think, at a very bare minimum, needs to have a common understanding or common classification of these FNPPs. If not, this is already done at the global level to ensure that we know what are we talking about when it comes to FNPP in the region. Then, of course, the next important one is safety, security, and safeguards requirement, right, around nuclear energy and also FNPP. So this is absolutely critical when it comes to dealing with emergency situations or when it comes to the next one, which is handling radioactive material. So this is where we need the region to be able to work together so that when spent fuel, fresh fuel, or other radioactive materials come through the region because of new build reactors, because of decommissioning reactors, or because of fuel replenishment, without a harmonization, I can already see the potential challenges of the region embracing FNPP as a whole. Right? And then the last part, which I think could be quite critical, is the financing of FNPP projects. In the future, floating nuclear may or may not be a national effort. Right? I mean, looking at how the industry is offering it as end product, could potentially be a leasing model, could also involve in some kind of joint technology venture. This could transform or move slowly from a national effort to a commercial effort. And when that happens, the region needs to have some form of harmonization in regulating the financing of floating nuclear power plant. When I say regulation, it's not to say that, okay, no, you cannot finance this or you can't finance that. It's more of, for example, what about having a green taxonomy that includes nuclear in the region so that other, you know, the financial institutions that are in favor of green financing can now fund nuclear project or even finance a FNPP related project. One example is produce hydrogen from floating nuclear, right? So can that be, included in the green financing schemes? The next part, you know, after regional harmonization is, of course, regional cooperation, right? So ASEAN Plan of Action for Energy Cooperation, this is a typical example when everybody talk about, right? We talk about ASEAN Power Grid, we talk about Trans-ASEAN Gas Pipelines, and also ASEAN Energy Market Integration. This is where the region work together to collectively scale up the demand for clean energy so we can have green power from Laos, or we can, you know, bring the renewables across the region where they have access and match that with the energy intensive demand in cities, for example, Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, or Bangkok. So that's the objective. And nuclear energy can actually help achieve that. Right? But the question is, if ASEAN doesn't work together, that means everybody will probably be choosing a different technology or different product. So different country might choose a different partners when it comes to technology selections, right? Depending on who they've been speaking with, who they've been working closely with, and the greater industrial partnership that they will have with this vendor or the country that this vendor come from. We don't want that because in the whole of ASEAN, the market is not that big, right? If you compare just with China, with India, we do not have as big a power market as those big countries. So if you are not collectively scaling up our demand for common technologies, the chances are we may not benefit from the cost reductions of SMRs or FNPPs as being advertised by the industry. And that will put the region at a losing end because we want to collectively scale it up so that electricity becomes competitive, right? The only way to do that is for the region to work together, right? Harmonize the codes and technical requirements, having a common understanding of where, how, and when to have nuclear technology, what purpose does it serve, and then understand where are the use cases of floating nuclear power plant in the regional context. But of course, important to make sure that the deployment of these FNPPs also meets the respective national energy objectives. And I think the most critical one, you know, now that we're talking about a post-COVID economic recovery, China opening up, and of course the geopolitical dynamics of what's happening between China, US, Russia, Ukraine. One may be wondering, so what's going to happen next to the super mega manufacturing setup that is right now in China? What is it going to be like in the future? And if ASEAN wants to be the next China in hosting manufacturing hubs, then the keywords going forward will be carbon neutral. So first of all, anything that's going to be produced from the region has to be carbon neutral. If not, it's probably a no seller going forward, right? And if you want to become a manufacturing hub, that means we will have, and we will have even greater energy shortage. Vietnam is already seeing it. And Vietnam wants clean and wants green power. And offshore wind and solar is not the answer for that. So FNPP offers a very natural, intuitive answer to that. But if the region wants to collectively scale up its manufacturing supply chain, then FNPP might actually be a channel for the region to work together, for the region on the regional cooperation. But the region has to work together today, not 10 years from now.
Thank you very much, Victor. I mean, there's so much in your response that is, I think, thought-provoking and food for thought. I just want to make a couple of comments. I think I completely agree with you when you say that the governance of nuclear energy is really a complex issue, is one that cuts across many sectors. You mentioned not just the energy sector, you mentioned legal and regulatory, you mentioned financing, you mentioned the environment. And here, I'd just like to mention that for us at CIL, we're doing research not just on international normative frameworks, but also regional normative frameworks. And something here that I think is on point is that our research shows that there is support, strong normative support for the fact that there is an ASEAN approach to nuclear governance. And in a nutshell, it's one that commits to following international rules, standards and practices. And it's also one that amongst other fundamental principles, it's one that commits to cooperation and coordination, which I think is a point you really emphasized when you talked about the importance of coming together to explore coordinated, harmonized positions. So I just wanted to add that because we're running out of time now and I need to move to close our session. So I just want to thank you, Victor, very much. It's been such a good discussion for us. It's given us lots of food for thought, as I mentioned. I certainly come away knowing a little bit more about molten salt reactor technology. So that leaves me to say, on behalf of the CIL team, the CIL Nuclear Law and Policy team, a very big thank you. Thanks very much, and it's been great having you with us.
Well, thank you, Denise. Thank you, CIL, for the nice, kind invitation. It's really a pleasure to speak in this episode. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to part 2 of episode 11 of Nuclear Matters at CIL. This concludes this 2-part episode on FNPP technology and regional perspectives. Have a good day.